Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Vasilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 301, being recorded on the 14th of October, 2019, with special guest Sarah Young. I'm Sajid, and on Teams with me, I have Cynthia, Kale, Evan, and of course, our special guest, Sarah, who is in a different time zone. Probably I think it's the next day where she is, but we'll get to her in just a minute. Let's just do a quick rundown on the Azure news. Let's see, Kale managed to sneak in a blockchain update in there as usual. Kale, I believe you're we're in Japan somewhere. What's going on there?
Yeah, I'm in Osaka. So last week we had a big event here that is called DevCon, which is our annual Ethereum conference. It's about 5,000, participants. And I presented on one thing. We had a couple other guys from Microsoft presenting, but we had two new things we released. One was, and I put the links in the show notes, but one was Open Zeppelin, which is a security framework that we're using for smart contracts. So we integrated that into our VS Code extension, and then also Infura, which is a node provider for public Ethereum nodes, testnet, mainnet, these kind of things. That's all integrated now, so it works just the same as Azure. So basically just integrating more partner solutions that are relevant in the space that people are using, and it was well received. Everything was good, except for we hit a typhoon here, and I had to stay here in Osaka a little bit longer, so Saturday was a little rough, but flying back today.
That's amazing. What a story that is.
There are worse places to get stuck. Let's just put it that right. Way.
Yeah. That's cool. What else? Cynthia, anything that catches your eye?
Yeah, I'm now seeing all the conflict on OneNote, but there were three things that I wanted to briefly touch on. One is the private preview of Azure Spring Cloud that we're working with Pivotal to build on, that it is now a fully managed Spring Cloud service for a lot of the Java developers. Now there's actually a managed service that you can use on Azure now, which is new and probably is relevant to a lot of people. The next thing is that you are now able to pipe your stream analytics into either a SQL managed instance or a SQL server on VM. So as soon as you've done that, you're able to do further business analysis and data warehousing on your data on very specific ways you want to use, because now you essentially have it in your SQL database, and in a relational database, you can do all the things you used to do with SQL.
I'm kind of shocked that's new. I guess I just missed that. I mean, that's good to see, but kind of surprised.
I guess I feel like they probably always have used it in a more managed way, where you probably can see like a dashboard of what all the data looks like,
right,
and
right,
do things on it, but you don't get the full control you would on a SQL server. And now we're opening that up because probably a lot of people want to do more things than we're offering on more of an out-of-the-box experience.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah. And the last thing I thought was very interesting, I never really thought about it that way, is that there is a recent study on measuring your return on investment to use Azure as a compliance platform. So at least for me, a lot of times when I think about Azure, it's really not having to do with the management overhead, but I never really thought of it from the compliance side. And there's like a whole white paper that we're going to include in the show notes that talk through like how easy it is to offload a lot of those workload management, reduce risk. It makes the audit a lot easier. And also just how many different security certificates we go through, that makes it just a lot easier on the customer by utilizing Azure policies or blueprints that are able to let the customers manage in a more holistic sense than to manage individual workloads. So
that's really those good. Are my... As a TAM, you must be getting that kind of question a lot, right?
I never really talk to my customer about compliance yet. Like, this is always something, like, we talk about when we first introduce them to Azure.
Right.
But once they're on Azure, like, we never really talk about it. But I guess now there's a good point to say, like, apart from it being a lot cheaper to run on your own hardware, we also get all of these.
That's right. Absolutely correct. Evan, I noticed an interesting update on SQL Server.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is actually, like, it, when I first read this, it didn't strike me as big until it really kind of processed. But basically, so today, right, one of the really cool things that you can do with Azure SQL DB and SQL Data Warehouse is they're fully integrated in the portal. You get this single pane of glass, you kind of can all manage all that there. Like, versus if you're using SQL on a VM, either a gallery image or one that you've installed on your own, you've got Management Studio, and there's kind of this segregated experience. Well, so what we've released now is what we call a resource provider, a SQL Server resource provider, which in essence allows Azure to get hooked into your SQL Server instance running on a VM. That is both for gallery images, and you can, backport's not the right word, but you can also tie it, you can basically tie it in even on kind of custom images that have SQL Server. So now you're going to have, regardless of how you deployed SQL Server, regardless of where you've deployed it, you know, whether, which flavor it is, like, you're going to have this single pane of glass, this single set of tools that you can use to get there. And that's really cool. It actually, even bigger than that in some ways, is now that opens the door to, like, for example, I was talking to the SQL PG, you know, 3 or 4 months back about, hey, wouldn't it be cool if this thing that we see always on customers have trouble with setting up in Azure, if we could detect it, and even if we can't fix it for them, we might could at least flag it somehow. Right, hey, you're configured in this way, you need to go change it. Well, we never could do that because there was no resource provider. Azure didn't really have awareness of how SQL Server on the VM was configured. Now all that's integrated. So now you're going to start seeing lots and lots of goodness of the Azure platform able to do things with your SQL Server VMs that we're doing today with SQL.
Nicely put, Evan. Thank you. That was very insightful. One last one that I want to bring up, of course, I love AKS, and this happens to be an AKS update over here. So, AKS has introduced something called managed entities. And until now, whenever you spin up an AKS cluster, you have to either bring your own service principal or have AKS create the service principal for you. And as you know, as a best practice with service principals, they should expire at some date. And so when you have to get to that, when you get to that date where the service principal is about to expire, there's all this drama in updating the service principal so that the new service principal can be put in there. And that can, in some cases, if you don't do it in time, you can wind up with a cluster that is totally bricked. And so to avoid that kind of confusion, they have managed identities. And when you use that option, Azure will automatically create two identities for you. They use MSI, so they create a system managed entity as well as a user managed entity. And the system managed entity is used for things like creating Azure services, like load balancers, et cetera. And the user managed entity can be used for accessing your own ACR instance or something that the user has provisioned. And so this makes it easy because you don't have to worry about the life cycle. You know, the renewals are all automatic. So it just comes and goes with the cluster. It's not something that you need to worry about once you set that up. So looking forward to that for sure. All right. Well, I think that's a good roundup on all the news. Sarah, sorry to keep you waiting. Let's turn the mic over to her, and please introduce yourself. Tell us what you're passionate about in the Azure space and what you're working on these days.
Okay, cool. And thanks for having me. Yeah, as you said before, it is not the 14th of October for me. It is definitely the 15th. I'm based in Australia, so I'm coming to you from the future, or whatever you want to call it. It's really strange when you look at it. I mean, I'm 18 hours ahead of the West Coast of the States. So yeah, it's a bit crazy, that time difference. I'm an Azure Security Architecture Global Black Belt. I'm based in Melbourne. I'm currently doing this from Sydney, though. I do travel around a lot around Asia. My specialties are unsurprisingly, Azure security architecture. So that includes things like firewalls, our DDoS, generally just how you architect things in a secure way. So we've got NSGs, VNets, how you set all of that up. We also work a lot with Azure Security Center, which is our infrastructure hygiene tool. And of course, then we've got to throw in a bit of Azure Sentinel, which is our new and sparkly thing that we have, which is our SIEM and SOAR platform that just went globally available, I think it was about 3 weeks ago now.
So yeah, that's interesting, Azure Sentinel. I like that name, actually. But give us some insight into why this product came about. Like, what were customers doing before we had Sentinel? Like, how did they handle SIEM kind of events in the past?
Okay, well, the SIEM in itself, and also more so in North America, most people say like SIM, so I apologize for my pronunciation. So with SIEM, I mean, it stands for Security Information and Event Monitoring. Now, the concept and products that cover SIEM have been around for a while. It's not new in itself, but most of these solutions were on-premise, and in order to get any kind of useful information from a SIEM, if you're not familiar with what one is, essentially what they do is they ingest logs from different sources, and then you're supposed to create detections on them. And as SIEM collects those logs, it will look for patterns and anomalies that might be suggestive of maybe a security incident or something. Now, that has been around for a while, but usually they've been on-premise. And of course, if you're throwing logs at a SIEM, the on-premise SIEMs often have storage restrictions, whereas Azure Sentinel is a cloud-based SIEM. So it sits within the Azure platform. It will scale up, scale down. It has pretty much unlimited storage capacity. And so what we've done is Microsoft just modernized the concept of a SIEM by bringing it into cloud. So for customers, it's effectively a SaaS, a software as a service, because there's no infrastructure set up. All they have to do is get logs ingested. And the idea is, the whole ethos is that out of the box, it's very, very easy to use. And from anyone who has had the misfortune to have to configure an older SIEM, usually they took weeks and months before you could get anything meaningful out of them. So that's kind of, why Microsoft created this product.
So because we collect all this data, are we also able to create like what best practices look like, or from judging from like all the data we collect, these patterns usually lead to these events? Or is it more individual to each tenant that we look at your data, and when these events happen in your tenant, it indicates X?
Yeah, so it's a tricky one. So basically, out of the box, Sentinel has a number of different machine learning algorithms, detections, and things that it will do. So it will start alerting as long as you collect some you connect some log sources, it will actually start doing detections pretty much straight out of the box. Now, they are more generic ones that come from Microsoft best practices from all the time we've been doing security operations in the cloud. But of course, customers are free to add their own. You can add your own machine learning models in. So we kind of see it as a bit of a kind of two-way thing. Like, Microsoft can provide you with some great out-of-the-box best practices, but as customers have very customized, individual environments, they may need to have specific detections from specific log sources, etc. And Sentinel gives you the flexibility to be able to put those ones in as well.
So when I've heard of SIEM in the past, and that's how I pronounce it, sorry if it's hopefully
correct.
Oh, that's
correct. Good. That's cool.
I think of products like Splunk or IBM Tivoli or things like that. Is this similar to that? I just want to understand where we stand and where this product sits.
When you say similar, do you mean in terms of what
the functionality, or what is it supposed to do? Is it a competing product? Things like that.
Well, I guess it is a competing product. I don't know Tivoli particularly well, but definitely Splunk. It is, it's certainly it can do all the things Splunk can do. It's just Splunk tends It uses a different query language. Of course, the small nuances in the difference of the product, but Sentinel has been built from the ground up by our security teams and our security operations teams within Microsoft. So it's much more adapted to hybrid environments. So that's customers who have cloud and other clouds as well. It's important to understand that Sentinel isn't just for Microsoft products. It is for any kind of product, because the whole point of SIEM is that, of course, you get logs from your entire estate to look for these advanced kind of attacks where they might be traversing your entire environment. So I get asked that a lot. Does it just do Microsoft products? And of course, it doesn't, just for clarity. So Sentinel's just a lot more modern. It's a new product, but it's a far more modern concept for security operations. And it also includes a SOAR, which is security operation automation and response. And the automation side of things in security operations is becoming more and more important, because with all these complex hybrid environments, you can't have a security analyst look at every single alert. It just doesn't work. So you need to have a degree of automation, because it means you can actually scale properly and get some consistency around your security operations and respond quicker, which of course is important.
Yeah, this has the other benefit. Like, I was looking at kind of the architecture. This is truly, this is deployed inside the customer subscription, but it is a PaaS, well, I guess it's more like SaaS service. Right. So we're upgrading, managing, growing it, right? Adding things, capabilities underneath, and the customer has to do nothing. Right.
Yeah.
They get all that stuff as it goes. They don't even necessarily really have to install updates. I mean, they're happening there under the covers, but I mean, right. It is truly native in that sense.
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, we give customers the option. They can add their own things like machine learning models using Azure Notebooks, but they don't have to do that. Certainly, if you're an organization that doesn't have the capacity or doesn't have the maturity or just doesn't want to do that, there's plenty of functionality in it that's there without you having to do that. But of course, if you're a more mature organization that wants to use those advanced features, then they're there as well. So it's a nice balance between the two.
How does Sentinel relate to Azure Security Center?
Oh, that's favorite question. I get asked that all the time, but it is a good question, and I totally understand why people ask that. So Security Center is an infrastructure hygiene tool. So it is about proactively detecting potential issues in your infrastructure, particularly around the configuration side, and helping you remediate those. And that's what we use the security hygiene recommendations for, and our one-click remediation. Now, so Security Center is only looking at infrastructure. It's not looking at the application. It doesn't look up that high in the stack. And of course, though, it can look across other clouds and on-premise if you've chosen to install it there. Security Center also has threat protection, and they're like what we call high fidelity alerts, where we've used all the threat protection and the threat intelligence that Microsoft gathers, just as being a big tech company, and it will do analysis locally on each host it's installed on, and it will create an alert. So for an example, you might get potential RDP brute force attack, and if you read the contents of this alert, it will say, we've looked at the logs, or the agent has looked at the logs. It has, in the last 30 minutes, we've seen 60 sign-in attempts, blah, 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 blah. And it's done a lot of analysis locally on the box before that threat alert is sent to Security Center. Now, what we want people to do is take those threat alerts that we call high fidelity alerts, which are basically much more likely to actually be a problem, because a big issue that we have in security operations is around false positives and something generating an alert that actually isn't an issue, because of course that can waste your security operations people's time if they're looking at false positives. So we want to try and minimize them as best we can. So that alert from Security Center, and this is the same if you're using Microsoft Defender, if you're using Azure AD, ATP, any of the other specialized threat products, all those consolidated alerts should be sent into your SIEM. So we would take those threat protection alerts from Security Center and send them into Sentinel. But Sentinel isn't just going to collect from Security Center. It will collect from Azure AD, Windows Defender ATP, any kind of other clouds. It can collect from your on-premise. It can collect application level logs because Sentinel takes everything. It sits over the top of everything. As the name suggests, it's looking at absolutely everything. So that's kind of the difference. I hope that makes sense.
So you have to use both, basically, right? Yeah, I was going to say, it looks like you really should use both from what you're saying.
Yes, that's right. That's what we'd recommend. Yeah. Now, from a security best practices point of view, if you've got another tool that's monitoring your infrastructure threat protection, if you've got some kind of other endpoint, there aren't very many out there, to be honest. But if you are, then that's great. You should use that product and send those alerts from that product to Sentinel. So the majority of customers I've talked to often don't have an alternative product for ASC. Now, in other areas, that of course, there are other products you could use, but like for endpoint protection, etc. But there's not a lot on that infrastructure side. So, yeah, definitely we recommend you use both because you want that specialized threat protection coming up into Sentinel. And it means that you have to send less raw logs at Sentinel. Previously in security operations, it was pretty much throwing every single log at your seam was what everyone thought was a great thing to do. But if you do that, you need to write detection rules for those logs. Otherwise, there's no point collecting them. And this comes from a colleague of mine. I can't claim credit for this, and I'll see if I can remember it now. But collection is not detection. It's actually really cool. Collection is not detection. And it's very true. I've seen many customers who collect so many logs, but if you haven't written a detection rule in your seam, nothing happens with it and there's no point. So by using these high fidelity alerts from specialized products, it actually simplifies your detection writing at the seam level. And I'm all about keeping things as simple as you can because it just makes it more manageable for everybody.
So along that line, it sounds like, by the way, I'm thrilled to have this product because like every 2 months in my life in Azure, it's, how do I get my data from ASC or something else into my own custom SEM system? That's how my side of the place pronounces it. But you know, now I'm glad I don't have to. I can point them to this. But it sounds like ultimately one of the things that we've got to be investing a ton in is to make the connectors and setting up all these connectors super easy for people, right? Because to your point, it doesn't do me any good if I have these two systems and I struggle to get them to talk together.
Yeah, that's right. And I've worked with lots of customers, both in Microsoft and prior to Microsoft. And with traditional on-premise SIEMs, a lot of people struggled to get their cloud logs into an on-premise SIEM. And I can say that not just from an Azure perspective, but from AWS as well. It's a bigger problem. So that's the kind of thing Microsoft's been trying to solve, is that we have as many connectors and we're always adding as we can. And the connectors are basically, because what you used to have to do with SIEMs, if anybody listening doesn't know, is you would have to write a parser in order to get those logs in and have the SIEM understand the logs. And we're trying to take as much of that away as possible by using these connectors. So it's usually a case of a couple of clicks or at least providing maybe a, you know, an account or something when it's a third party product, and off you go, you know, super, super easy, which is great.
Yeah. One follow-up question. So if somebody does reach out and say, hey, you know, I've got some product that doesn't integrate, you know, how do I get a connector? Is there a channel or a forum for those?
We have, you can always request things. It's the usual kind of feedback for Microsoft. Of course, you can do it within the Azure portal. If you have like an account team, of course, you can feed it back to them. Sentinel was in public preview for a good 6 months-ish, and we took loads and loads and loads of feedback and are continuing to do so on what kind of connectors, in addition to the ones we already have, that customers really want. So there's a couple of different channels depending on kind of what sort of business you are. There's always the Azure portal, but as well, you can feed it back to all your Microsoft account teams. As I said, now Sentinel's gone globally available. We've got a better idea of the roadmap. So that's always nice when something goes globally available and comes out of preview, when we have a better idea of what's happening. But I think it's relatively safe to say, if it's a well-known product that is not niche at all, it is highly likely to be getting a connector in the future. Now, of course, we won't be able to write connector for everything, but that's basically the idea. So fingers crossed, we'll cover most things for people.
Awesome.
So the very simplest level, if I have a Linux box that has syslogd or something running and collecting logs, and I want to ship those logs over to Sentinel, what do I have to do?
Okay, so a couple of ways to do it. So it depends. Are we talking about in the cloud or on-prem?
It doesn't matter. I mean.
Okay. So for syslog, there is a syslog we recommend, depending on, you can either send it from each syslog endpoint, so each individual server, send it up to Sentinel through the connectors, or you can, if you've got a centralized syslog server, which is probably more the case for on-premise, you can install the syslog, you can install the agent on there, and it will just ship them all up into Sentinel, so super easy. Bear in mind, there's another thing to bring into all of this mix, is that Sentinel sits on top of a log analytics workspace. So if you're a customer that's already using Log Analytics and already shipping those logs and logs from your environment into Log Analytics, then Sentinel can already see them. So you're sorted anyway. So it does depend on where you're at with your infrastructure as to what will be the most straightforward way to do it.
Yeah, and I was just exactly the follow-up question I was going to ask you is that this is not really meant to be, like, you know, in Splunk, I see customers use it as a troubleshooting tool as well, right? So it's a SIEM tool, but they'll also go there, do queries, look for, you know, what happened yesterday and things like that. I'm guessing Sentinel's not meant for that. Is that correct?
Well, you could certainly, I mean, that's not its primary focus. I mean, it sits on top of log analytics. Now, if a customer had asked me if they just wanted to do some of those things you just described, then
use
I would
log point analytics.
To, then you would use log analytics from an Azure perspective. But as Sentinel sits on top of log analytics, I mean, you could access it and do it through Sentinel. Though, to me, to keep things clean, I'd probably keep more your non-security focused type queries in log analytics and keep your security focus queries within the Sentinel workspace just to you know, keep things tidy. But in theory you can do it because it's still querying the same database and the same store. Right. So
perfect. That's great. So what, I know you said it's in preview now. What
no it's in it's, it went globally available about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, in J, excellent. So what's coming? Like, what's coming forth, or, you know, stuff that you can talk about that like what are some of the things you're working on maybe to improve the product or based on customer feedback and things like that, you know, anything that you're aware of?
So we have, as I talked about, there's a lot of different connectors coming for, you know, any well-known products and well-known cloud platforms should be getting connectors. We also have the ability now to manage different, so particularly for like managed service providers, because currently a Sentinel workspace is mapped one-on-one with a log analytics workspace. Now, sometimes we have customers who have multiple Azure tenancies, or more commonly we have managed service providers who may need to manage multiple different tenancies. So you're able to do that now through Azure Lighthouse. So that's pretty cool. Of course, we'll be adding, we're always adding all the time, you know, more threat intelligence, which is what we do to all our Microsoft security products, because we process 6.5 billion telemetry signals a day, which is all being normalized and fed into our security products. So, you know, that's like Windows Defender, ATP, ASC, Sentinel, etc. So we're always adding things like that. Trying to think of anything super exciting. We're always adding more to our automation side of things. So there'll be more options for how you can automate things. We use Logic Apps for that. So if anyone's used Logic Apps, it should be nice and familiar. So we're always adding more functionality there. There's lots of exciting things coming for Sentinel, I think. So it's obviously early days, as it only went globally available about three weeks ago. But yeah, definitely very exciting. Yeah.
How does the pricing work, by the way? Is that like by server or by an amount of data ingested, things like that?
Yeah, it's by the amount of data ingested. So we have now available online for anybody to use a pricing calculator. So you put in, you know, the amount of logs you expect to ingest roughly. So I don't know, say a gigabyte a day or whatever. And it can help you through working out the cost for potentially using Sentinel. So there are a couple of different variables, of course, depending on your environment. So yeah, at a very high level, it's an ingestion charge, but I definitely point people in the direction of the calculator, and so they can go work it out for themselves.
It is, and this, I mean, this may be answered in the calculator, and so that's fine. But like, I run into people all the time. Well, how much data do you send? I don't know. Like, they don't really know how to translate what they've got to size of data, right? Like, yeah. They just know that they send data. Is there like a general rule of thumb in the industry? Hey, the average server is going to send, you know, with the average product is going to send, you know.
Unfortunately, not really for, it's a real pain. Not really because, you know, you can have, there are so many different types of servers and what application the server runs and then what logs. It's so variable, it's very difficult to say. Now, I would say though, in my experience, though I have seen people who buck this trend, large organizations tend to send, but someone will definitely tend to send no more than at the most maybe a gig to 5 gig a day. I'd say that's probably for most organizations, the very most they would send. Having said that, I have seen odd, very, very large enterprises who send a lot more than that. And I do find that customers who have got an on-premise SIEM usually have a rough idea of how much they send. Because the reason they would know for an on-premise SIEM is because on-premise SIEMs have limited storage capacity. So they kind of have to understand roughly what they're going to send at the SIEM every day, because they can actually fill up the SIEM. So, but you're right. If someone's going from scratch or they don't have a SIEM, they may not know.
But it sounds like that's a good number for them to start with, right? And then obviously everybody's going to be a little bit different, but at least they're not sitting there going, oh, I don't know what number to put it in calculator, right? So I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah, I think the key is going to be, as Sarah was saying, you know, to only collect what you need, because I know my customer for sure, they're, I think, in the terabytes per day, you know, they're sending in. So this is going to blow anything out of the water. They have to be very careful what they're going to send to a device like this, to a service like this.
Collection is not detection.
Collection is not detection. We are saying to customers, and we are really encouraging them, like, if you're looking at modernizing your security operations, modernizing your SIEM, to actually go back and actually look at all these logs. If they are collecting a very large number of logs, we are saying to them, you know, are you actually running detections on these? Because if you're not, why are you collecting them? Like, it is a good sort of checkpoint to try and tidy up and simplify that as well.
Yep. So I do have one last question. I was reading through the documentation. There's an idea of hunting for threats on Azure Sentinel. Could you describe kind of what that meant?
Yeah, so hunting is when we, as the name kind of suggests, is when we proactively go and look for threats in an environment. So what that means is, so it may be that we've seen an alert or a detection, and now Sentinel can do a lot of things and draw those alerts together, but it might be if you have a more proactive security operations team, and that tends to be a maturity thing. Rather than just waiting for alerts, Sentinel has the ability to help you query your environment with all the logs it can see to proactively look for threats. So you could run queries that say, let's look for, this particular .exe file or something, if it's known to be malicious, you could write a query for that. There's various different things you could do. So that's what hunting's about. So it depends on the business and where they're at. You probably generally reach a certain level of maturity before you do hunting. Before that, security operations tends to be quite reactive rather than proactive. But Sentinel can certainly support doing that, and it's very cool.
Now, we're going over our allocated time, but just a quick question: is it really easy for customers to get onboarded with Azure Sentinel, or is it like some drama they have to go through in terms of, you know, a lot of configuration parameters and having to figure out a whole bunch of things, or get somebody like you to help them through the process?
Really, really easy. So all you do is, if you don't have a log analytics workspace, you need to set one up. If you do already have one, all you need to do is set Sentinel up over log analytics. It takes all of about 5 minutes. When you set up Sentinel, it comes with a lot of out-of-the-box detection, so you actually don't need to set up any queries, at least not initially. You can use, you know, our best practices to get you going. The only thing you have to do is add some connectors, because of course without a data without data sources, Sentinel can't do anything. But you can work through the different connectors that we have, and you can just connect those to start with. Of course, then if you've got some other log sources you want to send in, you can do that as well. But really, the idea is that Sentinel is very easy to get going. We've got a lot of material online. I have an Azure Fridays episode where I show connecting a few different connectors online as well. We've got lots of material online, but really, even if you've never touched a Seam before, it should be fairly self-explanatory to get it going. That's the idea anyway. We hope so. And every customer I've dealt with so far hasn't seemed to have too many issues, at least getting that initial setup going.
Great. Well, Jory, thank you so much for taking the time from all the way from Australia to help us out.
From the future.
Oh,
yeah, from the future.
To help us out and help us understand what Azure Sentinel is all about. I know I, for one, have got a much better understanding. Guys, any more questions for Sarah before we let her go?
No, this is great. Thank you, Sarah, for
helping.
Thanks.
Oh, no, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. If you have any kind of, you know, links, tips, et cetera, you want to share, we'll put the link to the Azure Fridays episode that you did, of course. Yeah, please send them my way and we'll add them along with the show notes.
Yeah, sure. No problem.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sarah.
Thank you. Have a great day.
I will do. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you and see you next time.